Ricky Rocket from Headbangers Ball, who had a 2-second cameo in the November Rain video as a political pundit on Fox News. These midterm elections are a vote for stopping Antifa punks from breaking the law, breaking the law. Judas Priest lives. Holla! This is the Painkiller! Holla! Thank you very much! This is the Hair Metal Comedian! Holla! Thank you very much! Watching my stuck-up, dumpy English mother-in-law, who acts all high and mighty, despite growing up in Manchester, England, with three other sisters, who had to share a bucket out back for number twos, being forced to spin the dreidel. My daughter, singing Rose, Shoshana Kornbluth, forced her to spin at the dinner table, which was a Hanukkah gift galore. Was like watching Moby being pressured into spinning Animal by Def Leppard at Webster Hall back in the day by Kid Rock with an AR-15 signed by Ted Nugent. Holla! Thank you very much! The Wailing Wall of Metal. Holla! Thank you very much! Eddie Van Halen is the reason I finger-tapped endless Friday nights away. Whenever my wife is out of the house, leaving me free to blare Eruption on vinyl and use my son, Headbangers Ball, aka Hardcore Hunger, like a mini air guitar appendage, which is what dreams are made of. Can I get a holla for the A-plus expression, mini air guitar appendage? You're welcome. Holla! Thank you very much! In these moments of high-kicking, rip-roaring delight, I'm able to let my hair down, relive my age of innocence, and become in touch with what made my unsure, pubescent, putz-plagued self come roaring to life like no other. Heavy metal music. Can I get a holla for preaching the gospel long time, for being in the zone of all zones, and the best is yet to come. Sinatra lives. Not very metal, but go walk yourself. I can give two fucks by your musical assignment designation, pitchfork. Holla! Thank you very much! But it was pictures from Circus Magazine of heavy metal guitarists such as the late great Eddie Van Halen who received prominent placement throughout my childhood bedroom wailing wall of metal. Especially in the pilot episode of a TV show I tried selling to VH1 Classic called Heavy Metal High, where Andrew Dice Clay appears in the nurse's office as my imaginary guiding star who teaches me how to rock after I finally achieve puberty and manage to burst inside my Fruit of the Looms after Lauren Lighthall tugs on her extra tight bra that day before Dice appears in a puff of smoke and says, "Congratulations, you finally achieved blast off, jerk off. Holla! Thank you very much!" And of course, I'll never forget the time when an Italian painter came to my bedroom. My parents wanted to repaint it. And I have all my hair metal gods on the wall throughout my wailing wall of metal. And the painter says, "You really like a lot of girly men glued all over your walls, don't you, kid?" And I said, "I'm sorry. Is that not manly enough for you? Dominic, I ain't no fag. Scalante? Holla! Thank you very much!" But back to my wailing wall of metal. There was Tommy, Nikki, the Freddy Krueger of shredding, Mick Mars, and the golden god of hardcore hair metal, Vince motherfucking Neil. Goodfellas lives. Holla! Scorsese, Forevermore. Thank you very much. There was Richie and the six string packing Luscious, La Cowboy, that gave both hair metal and New Jersey a good name. John Bon Jovi. There was Ricky, Bobby, and the guitar swirling, bleached out Tasmanian Devil, CC DeVille, and the motorbike flying, midnight sun touching, Bret Michaels. There was the Gypsy Road roaring, lip furling, metal blues howler extraordinaire, Tom Kiefer from Cinderella. There is the alien tune, borderline mute, self-anointed guitar god Steve Vai, and the Sunset Strip pioneers of shimmering hair metal sleaze Rat, led by Body Talking Incarnate, Mr. Way Cool Jr. himself, Stephen Percy. Back in the day, these sweet hair metal gods of mine made MTV the hottest, coolest after school party around, all while restoring decadent sluttiness to the Sunset Strip in a blaze of glory. They breathed renewed life into the city of fallen angels before they drove that fire-breathing, booze-fueled, nose-candy-powered crazy train into the ground in one seemingly endless, hell-raising victory lap for the ages. Randy Rhoads lives. Ha! Thank you very much! To live anyway else was nuts. Soon to come, though, was Seattle grunge, Starbucks, and the death of Teen Spirit, which fucked up the party for good. There would be no more fun in the sun once it became a black one, thanks to Soundgarden. There would be no more dirty deeds when it became known that AIDS was here to stay all the way. Sinatra lives again. Holla! Thank you very much! There would be no more hilarious solo albums by Diamond Dave because the blonde clown overseer of fun was replaced by the flannel-wearing suicidal one, allegedly. Holla! Thank you very much! There would be no more hair metal masterpieces by Def Leppard or, dare I say, Guns N' Roses because Kurt Cobain would make it hip to protest against the cheesy, bimboed out brand of 80s consumer capitalism. Holla! Thank you very much! The million-dollar question remaining is, did Nirvana really kill off the age of hair metal with just one album, never mind? And the answer is no. Nirvana did not kill off hair metal. AIDS did, before magic made HIV disappear. That's why Generation X, my generation as a whole, that's why members of Generation X prefer our coffee like our comedy. Dark and bitter. Holla! Gene Garofalo lives. Kind of. Thank you very much! And related, MTV News. Back in the day, circa 1996. Don't you think the chorus, "Can't Find a Better Man," is a tad egocentric, Eddie Vedder? Courtney Love told Billy Corgan from the Smashing Pumpkins the same line before her shotgun marriage to Kurt Cobain. Kurt Cobain's spirit animal was definitely the wise-ass owl who was all about injecting smack into his lyrics and endless catty interviews on MTV2. Kurt Loder lives. Holla! Thank you very much! Sebastian Bach, lead singer of Skid Row, asked Nirvana to tour with them for their follow-up album, Slave to the Grind. And Kurt Cobain declined, saying, "We can't because we're homophobic." Hilarious! Sebastian Bach was caught wearing a shirt prior that said, "AIDS kills fags dead," which is dumb, because dead, especially in caps, is an extraneous exclamation point at that point in the sentence. Sebastian Bach claims only girls buy records for the hair metal ballads. So you're a fag if you fell for the gooey love burst every time too. The first time I heard The Haunting, Stuck in Time, Church Bell Clang on Hell's Bells by AC/DC, my pubescent soul no longer felt like an amorphous void of scaredy cat goo. It was as if God came down from heaven himself through my boombox of yesteryear to tell me, you're more metal than you think, kid, and you'll only start living when you get out of your self-esteem strangling head already, which is what heavy metal is doing to you right now. So stop acting like another Richard Lewis clone in the making. As you can see, I also breathe renewed life into knock-kneed, putz-prone kids like yourself through AC/DC. Your manly metamorphosis has begun. You're welcome, Bon Scott. Best front man of all time. Brian Johnson, best follow-up number two. Not even close. Holla! Sammy Hagar, deal with it. Thank you very much! The first time I heard The Haunting, Stuck in Time, Church Bell Clang on Hell's Bells by AC/DC, my pubescent soul no longer fell like an amorphous void of scaredy cat goo. I just wanted to jump out of my head and flex my manhood that still hadn't developed yet, because I was still the last kid that got into the puberty party, which was extra brutal because my younger brother, who I was 3 years older than at the time, had not only achieved puberty before I did, but he also banged the three hottest girls in his class that I tried to jerk off to at the time, but couldn't, which made me feel like a big brother bust, like Eddie Curry on the Knicks back in the day with a shittier hook shot. Holla! Thank you very much! So, it was only fitting for me to eventually receive my TV writing break, which was 15 years in the making, when I was hired by VH1 Classic to write all the TV host reads for America's Hard 100, which ranked the greatest hard rock and heavy metal videos of all time. Hosted by WWE great Chris Jericho, also main songwriter and frontman of the heavy metal band Fozzy. During the shoot, I wrote him this line about Bruce Dickinson from Iron Maiden that says, next up on the countdown is a song by a man called the Human Air Raid Siren, because his voice pierces through the clouds of super metal heaven. I'm fucking up the line. whose supernatural voice pierces through the clouds of heavy metal heaven. And then after that, Chris Jericho freaks out and he says, who wrote that line? And I said, Chris, that would be the big-headed, knock-kneed Putz Jew over here who couldn't dunk a basketball if his life depended on it. Holla! Thank you very much! The one line Chris Jericho wouldn't do during the countdown was when he said that a line that I wrote for him was that he was the only wrestler from the WWF who after 30 years that is still rock hard, which was a shrinkage joke regarding steroids, and he would not touch that with a 10-foot pole. So it's very fitting for me to get my break. That was 15 years in the making, being hired as a head writer for America's Hard 100. But the first time I heard the song Eruption at my all-Jewish sleepaway camp in Kent, Connecticut, I felt like a meteor shower blasted through my Hanes tidy whities, which amplified my heavy metal-loving soul with a higher octane surge of propulsive might than ever before. The most special thing about Eddie Van Halen's music making career. For me, it was being blessed to play with his son, Wolfgang, for a living. His son, Wolfgang, who taught to play piano, bass, and drums, posted on Instagram, "I couldn't have asked for a better father. He got to make magical metal music with his dad, which is what made Eddie Van Halen feel most in touch with the divine." He was quoted as saying, "I couldn't wait to make music with my son." Because, from what I've read, Eddie Van Halen wanted to transfer his love of creation through songwriting and guitar playing, which is what made him feel most alive, knowing he constantly made comments about wanting to make the most of his God-given blessed talents. No wonder the late great Eddie Van Halen kept writing to his son Wolfgang to play more majestic metal music again and again. Also, the name Van Halen is an homage to the family name because Eddie's brother, Alexander Arthur Van Halen, their longtime drummer, was also one of the founding members of the band, responsible for the band's signature funk-filled pounding backbeat, which got the entire world off its feet. Van Halen lives. Holla! Thank you very much! Long live Van Halen's Wailing Wall of Metal. Van Halen ruled on top of the metal world for more than a while. Wolfgang's professed love of his dearly departed father on Instagram really got to me, strumming my heartstrings ever so light, because his dad gave him the opportunity to dream. And boy, did Wolfgang love his dad back for it, for making him feel like the center of his universe instead of the reverse. And that's how you know when it's love. Sammy Hagar reigns supreme again. Holla! Thank you very much! The world's most woke arena, the Foo Fighters, just played Madison Square Garden's first big concert post-pandemic on June 20th in front of 20,000 fans, immune to catching any semblance of taste throughout their ever-long, edgeless lives. But Dave Grohl is one of the good guys, bro. He's an accessory to murder. If Kurt Cobain killed himself, Woody Allen still stands a shot at winning Father of the Year. If Frank Sinatra is Ronan Farrow's father, then why isn't Woody Allen sleeping next to Secretariat yet? Corny Love is Mia Farrow with better husband selection. Can you get a fake news, fake vaccine ID in Times Square today? Or does domestic terrorist money payments in Bitcoin no longer apply? What if a MAGA groupie flashed her tits at Dave Grohl in the front row before throwing a secret stash of hydrochloroxine on the stage? Would she be banned from MSG for inciting a riot against good drugs that would have saved plenty of name? There have been more than 6,000 plus reported deaths from the alleged miracle non-FDA approved vaccine designed to keep you safe from the made-in Wuhan virus, financed by U.S. tax dollars thanks to Dr. Noki's use of gain-of-function research designed to get you more than rabies from Chinese bats made in Wuhan. What happens when that number reaches 100,000? Will the WHO be invited to play next year at MSG if they promise not to play "We Won't Get Fooled Again"? Or was that Pete Townsend's alibi when he got caught clicking on soapy bottoms at Nothing to See Here at MoveOn.org in the name of opposition research for a song about Pizzagate conspiracy theorist Alex Jones Lives? Holla! Thank you very much! And if Michael Jackson were alive today, Monique, how would he defend himself against his Neverland accusers? Exactly. Would he say, "All the Beatles royalty points in the world can't buy me love? And this is an impersonation of Marlon Brando staying in his Don Juan psychiatrist character while engaging in chit-chat with his Bel Air next-door neighbor, Michael Jackson. Michael, just because it happens on the Neverland Ranch doesn't mean it never happened, Michael. Can I get a holla for some more A-plus gemery? Brando lives. Holla! Thank you very much! A stolen suicide note is better than none. Robin Williams spent a career stealing bits, taking them higher, and paying those comics he stole from in the first place as a form of last-minute compensation to assuage their frowning souls for making their material shine way brighter than they ever could, regardless if they killed at the Comedy Store after Louis Anderson that night or not. Holla! Thank you very much! So, is it too much to expect Robin Williams, as self-centered as comedians are, to leave his daughter a suicide note to explain why her love wasn't enough to keep him hanging on? Vanilla Fudge lives. Holla! Thank you very much! Losing your memory is super scary. Yet for a man of his high intelligence and developed emotional empathy, for being born an only child, left to play army figures by himself, who played Peter fucking Pan for a living for a cool 20 mil, couldn't have Robin willed away to summon some old-time improv magic after making the decision to kill himself? And then say out loud to himself, yes, killing myself is the only way out of this crippling despair. But first, remember to love your daughter enough to write her a fucking suicide note stolen from a Kurt Cobain lyric on Nirvana Unplugged. Or not. Make her a YouTube video dressed up like Miss Doubtfire singing Jesus Doesn't Want Me for a Sunbeam. Anything. Mueller. Mueller. Holla. Thank you very much. I know. Towards the end, Robin Williams struggled to remember his lines, as Teddy Roosevelt in the set of Night at the Museum, such as, why doesn't anybody charge DMX of cultural appropriation for thugging up the Rough Riders brand for all it was worth? Holla! Thank you very much! I get it. For an extended period of time, Robin Williams was used to being the funniest man alive, who never suffered from speechless, dull man's disease. I just feel bad for his daughter, Zelda, who has to take a break from social media on the anniversary of her father's suicide every year because she's emotionally drained from all the effusive fan mail she receives in her dead dad's honor. Describing all the wonderful memories her father gave millions of strangers as she strains to conjure up many loving memories left without her punctured heart thinking, I'm glad my dad made your life so much happier than your own dad did. But here's a concept. Ease up on sucking off the spirit of my dead dad during the anniversary of his death every year, knowing Patch Adams would have provided me with some modicum of closure if he didn't make it all about him again and left me a suicide note that said, 13 reasons I don't want to leave this world yet, regardless if I'm not the shining comedy star I used to be or not. Zelda, 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 Zelda. That's for you, Zelda. Moving forward, we will refrain from more depressingly dreary suicide material in Zelda's honor. Holla! Thank you very much! Our schlocky, schlong music. Holla! Thank you very much! Listening to Steve Perry's new album on Spotify this morning made me feel like the eunuch sentimentalist in Game of Thrones. But why am I so hurried desperate to relink with my age of innocence again? Granted, anyone who remains a stay-at-home dad on purpose for 1 second longer has no problem remaining a eunuch for the time being. At the same time, why do cocksure heterosexual men or gender-fluid shemale comedians like me feel compelled to deride some sappy, sad, downer power ballad songs as eunuch sentimentalist music at all? Holla! Thank you very much! I think it's because as we get older and get a tad more jaded around the edges of a broken heart, Vixen lives. Holla! Thank you very much! We don't buy into the irrefutable, absolute, rock solid truism behind certain famous sing-along lyrics of yesteryear by Chicago, such as "How can I go on? How can I go on?" Starters find a fresher, tighter snatch to fall in love with, who doesn't deride the workshopped over comedic genius behind iconic FX shows such as Rescue Me as being merely sexist. Just because a bunch of hot chicks throw themselves at Dennis Leary's fireman character, which isn't a radical departure from reality, considering the post 9/11 times it was made in. Okay, Leary lives. Holla! Thank you very much! Understand, before 9/11, firemen as a whole in New York were derided by the NYPD as mere catch-free snatchers, burnt-out line cooks, or Magic Mike wannabes. Okay, Dennis Leary lives. Holla! Thank you very much! 9/11 changed all that. That's why de Blasio, shooting down the Freedom Tower tribute ceremony this past year over alleged COVID concerns, was ridiculously dumb. Because out of the blue, I don't think 9/11 first responders were sweating the prospect of catching an itchy esophagus. Now, regardless of the NYPD being defunded or not, they've lost the moral high ground over New York City firemen, especially since every day now for cops is standing down day. Holla! Thank you very much! Cops in New York have so much free time on their hands these days. They're the ones taking how to make ravioli from scratch classes at the 92nd Street Y. Cops who insist on taking a knee today proves how undercover cops left in the force who haven't retired prematurely yet are still down with wearing Nike sweatsuits no matter what. Holla! Thank you very much! But momentous, hair standing on the back of your neck, tingly songs like The Flame by Cheap Trick still sway my heart toward more promise-filled tomorrows than any shitty, melodic-free rap song by Nipsey Hussle today, which is a testament to the timeless appeal behind emotive, heartfelt, male-articulated lyrics, man, versus most radio-friendly rap songs, both old and new, which deride women interested in riding a rapper's joystick out of its socket as mere money-grubbing, stupid-ass, over-the-hill hoes. Sebastian Bach, the original lead singer of Skid Row, claims only teenage girls, you know, bought their dead record because of their monster rock ballad hit, I Remember You. So you're a twinkle-toe bitch for pretending you bought the dead record, Skid Row, to only hear Big Guns and Rattlesnake Shake again and again otherwise. Holla! Thank you very much! Reality is, though, the soaring guitar solo in I Remember You is exalted, high-end, heartfelt rock at its finest that sounds even more kick-ass melodic special over time. Because it's my unique sentimentalist music that came out in my time when I didn't even hit puberty yet, let alone have a clue on how to exert my manhood, if it finally bloomed under my fruit of the looms already. Rodney lives. Holla! Thank you very much! After feeling like the last kid to enter the puberty party in school. But that's okay, because I grew a sack eventually. And some hair on it too. Or else, I never would have dared to make it through my never-ending pain period as a cold-calling IT agency headhunter at 22 in LA. A long, long way from home. Foreigner lives. Holla! Thank you very much! Nor would I've ever contemplated trying open mic stand-up comedy at the Rainbow Lounge on the Sunset Strip, where hair metal sleaze incarnate rat once reigned supreme, getting endless perfect tens to let their bodies do their talking for them. I also wouldn't have hit on my future wife and mother of my three pitch-perfect, heavy metal-loving children after hitting on three other girls prior with relentless horn dog crazed wheel and deal zeal without the power ballad soundtrack of my youth pulsating through my on with the show heart. Old school Motley Crue lives. Holla! Thank you very much! So, why are underlying hopeful power ballads that prove men are capable of being deeper than the 18th hole considered softcore girly again? Men in long hair and makeup back in the 70s and 80s singing songs starting with Barry Manilow didn't counterbalance that perception one bit. Meanwhile, Ronnie Van Zant sang Freebird, which was considered an original power ballad of its day. And he'd make Neil Young his Canadian cunt in the can without breaking a sweat while yelling, "More shriekish wailing, Young! I'm not buying you being whipped on a southern man, being all freeing up in your jailbird ass yet! Holla, Skinner lives! Thank you very much!" Power ballads are considered soft girly because most men are too chicken shit to spill their innards out to a woman in person, let alone on wax, after a record company fronts them 200,000 bones to make it for millions to hear. Power ballads will always woo because they burst with romantic longing for more hopeful filled tomorrows, which hold out the promise of soothing the tissue torn teen hearts in us all, especially among us gun-shy dudes plagued by our frozen with fear past. But I don't buy for a minute the horseshit premise which insists that the era of internet porn on demand, flush with tatted-out white girls and crystal meth, has completely stripped our need for the comforting lift that great power ballads provide us all. Hair Metal Nation doesn't exist without the power ballad hits that never lost the pull they have on Gen X guys and gals because it's unique sentimentalist music that hit big in our hearts in our time. It belongs to us, and nobody can ever take that away from we. Goonies lives, Sean Austin Green. Holla! Thank you very much! Also, when we all fell in love with the soft, soothing sounds of 9 p.m. clock radio music by REO Speedwagon, we weren't fixated on the singer or image in the video, but on our aching, incomplete hearts, longing for a willing recipient of our love burst already. Big tits are great, but they don't overcompensate for an okay face or an even worse, bitch-laden, one-note heart that fluctuates from softcore bitch to full-fledged scowly cunt in a New York minute. Can I get a holla for preaching the gospel a long time? Holla! Thank you very much! What makes power ballads so powerful? Featherly Light Finger Tapping by CC DeVille on Every Rose Has Its Thorn is great, no doubt. For me, though, what makes power ballads so powerful is the rousing, never say die attitude for giving love another shot with all you got. Like the late, great Janie Lane from Warren Sings with such soul-stirring feeling on Sometimes She Cries. Warren lives. Holla! Thank you very much! Holding out the hope the more pregnant filled tomorrows is what makes power ballads pack some extra exalted, it's not over yet, asshole, oomph for me. Is it time to move past 14 yet? Not even close, because like the surly, underrated Brittany Fox screeched back in the day with ultra throaty soul metal verve, it's a long way to love. Holla, Brittany Fox lives. Thank you very much. So don't give up on your storybook romance life just yet. You dream the fuck on. Aerosmith lives. Holla, thank you very much. Until you make your new dreams to remember come true. Otis Redding lives. Holla! Thank you very much! Or else, love really does bite. Def Leppard lives. Holla! Thank you very much! If you allow it to get into, if you allow love to get in the last lacerating lick and stop believing in your right to live a fulfilling life flush with your own fair share of heavy metal highs to cherish forever. Save the weak, like Brittany Fox did. Hound down your innermost love and never allow anyone the power to damper your special spark shine inside that gives you more than a feeling. Boston lives. Holla! Thank you very much! Death of a Bose salesman. Once upon a time, there was a sales rep for Bose who suffered from loud man's disease. He loved blasting The Who, Led Zeppelin, and AC/DC at work in the listening booth before he turned borderline deaf. Now, all Michael Kornbluth, the sales rep from Bose. Now, all Michael, the sales rep from Bose, was capable of hearing was the AC/DC song, Hell's Bells! Back in Black lives. Holla! Thank you very much! Michael Kornbluth, a.k.a. Michael Yeller, who suffered from big-time loud man's disease, always believed louder was better until now, because he was no longer able to sing Search and Destroy by Iggy Pop and the Stooges at the local karaoke bar in White Plains, New York, after work with his boss and best friend in the universe anymore. Growing up, Michael only wanted to play air guitar, like the great hardcore hair metal shredders of his day that graced his wailing wall of metal as a kid, which included pictures of Mick Mars from Motley Crue, the Freddy Krueger of shredding, the steel guitar slang, Gypsy Road Howler, Tom Kiefer from Cinderella, and the Tasmanian Devil of pretty good metal pop, CC DeVille from Poison. Later, Michael tried to learn the guitar after his parents got him an acoustic one for Hanukkah, but he already started smoking weed by junior year in high school, so the hand dexterity and hours of practice necessary to assume any semblance of functional playing mastery over the guitar were out of his self-imposed reach. After college, Michael tried to make a living as an IT headhunter in LA, but IT directors half his age, meaning twice as old as he was, didn't appreciate being hounded by such a loudmouth New Yorker who had less voice control than Busta Rhymes at a midnight showing of Higher Learning. Also, everyone in LA compared to New York were very cagey and accustomed to time alone in their cars and airy open rooftop hotel bars and nondescript low-key bars on random 0-foot traffic streets, unaccustomed to Vince Vaughn clones from Swingers from New York, like Michael, who's actually told to hush while on a date to see Eric Clapton at the Hollywood Bowl once. Eventually, Michael moved back to New York and did digital ad sales for City Search and started to try open mic stand-up comedy. When working for City Search, he'd say on stage, "City Search is a city guide used mostly by gay men to find out who gives the best facial." But Michael struggled to unleash his inner rock star on stage because if his first joke bombed, he would never win the audience back, which stripped him of the confidence to riff and piggyback off the waves of laughter, opting to go into any new inspired direction of hilarity he chose. At the Christmas party for City Search, Michael sang his best rendition of Wanted Dead or Alive yet, which he had perfected over the years. The high-end 15-year Macallan Scotch helped. Still, he got fired the next day for getting blackout drunk and dry-humping the coat check girl on the dance floor. So, oh, what a feeling. Knowing Michael couldn't pay rent through playing air guitar renditions of Fallen Angel in Times Square or make any money at stand-up comedy in New York City because he actually had to invite his friends to get performing time at the New York Comedy Club at all, he decided to find a job where his loud man disease could be neutralized, where it wouldn't become such a career-hindering liability, and got a job in the suburbs at the Westchester Mall in White Plains, New York, selling state-of-the-art stereo equipment for Bose. Michael's boss gave him some leeway and allowed him to tell some jokes because he knew the stand-up comedy bug wasn't out of his system altogether. Michael would be selling noise-cancellation headphones, Yenta silencers is what he called them, specifically, before sampling new bits on random customers such as, did you know Google fired 25 software engineers for sexual harassment? But software engineers are too busy banging out code to hit on girls at work. Plus, if you're a software engineer at Google, your typical Perl command script isn't massage my carpal tunnel ho. And have you tried Snoop Dogg's new Cabernet wine? Wine Spectator says it tastes like mouthwash used in porn hood hell. But one day, during a demo presentation for AC/DC Back in Black on surround sound in the Primo listening sampling room at work on vinyl, Michael lost his ability to hear fully. Now, only hearing the death knell church bell clang to Hell's Bells, was God punishing Michael for his loud man's disease forever? How could Michael ever sing karaoke again with his best friend's boss in the universe while losing all semblance of voice control whatsoever? Michael was a really good sales rep for Bose, but reality is the speakers sold themselves. Michael's boss and favorite karaoke partner let him keep his job at Bose, but got him off the sales floor to work as a blogger for their digital marketing team instead, allowing him to rant and rave about all the loudest and proudest, most badass metal rock records of all time, which are only accentuated on Bose's premium blast speakers. Michael would fire off blog record recommendations for albums by The Who, Neil Young, and Crazy Horse, and Van Halen with divine-powered authority. He'd pound the keyboard nonstop all day long, which was sweet music to his boss's ears, knowing his employee and dear friend Michael could channel his love of fast, loud, kick-ass metal like a bat out of hell, which sent his heart soaring, flying high again. In the end, Michael couldn't sell Bose speakers on the main sales floor anymore, but he was still able to sell his love of loud metal music through his blogs, and also had the kick-ass, momentous clang of Hell's Bells playing in his head for company. And Michael didn't need Meatloaf to tell him 2 out of 3 ain't bad. The Foo Fighters are playing Madison Square Gardens.